Hello friends, welcome once again to the latest episode of Kings of Anglia podcast. My name is Mark Heath and with me ever is Andy Warren, the Hotch Monster.
Hello.
And to my right there's an empty chair because Stuart Watson's meant to be here. We sat down in here, what, 10, 15 minutes ago, Andy, to start recording. He's just, still not appeared.
He's just messing around.
Essentially, he thinks his time is more important than ours, so we've decided to start. So, Andy, what have you been up to?
Trip to the seaside yesterday, Mark.
Yeah,
a day off after Derby. We'll get to the football nonsense in a minute, but yeah, a little trip to the seaside. Time with the granddad.
Yeah.
All good.
Good stuff. And you had your third pint of the year, I understand. Was it, does it count as a pint?
No, it was a shandy. I don't know if that counts as a pint.
Oh, he is.
Oh, here he is.
Oh, he walks in.
Here comes Wally Watson.
Swam me up,
that
is.
Oh. Oh, we are actually recording, Stewie. So we decided to start since you were taking forever.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So the thing that's wound you up shall remain unnamed.
Yeah.
You can speculate about that.
But joining the party, Stuart Watson, the Doctor of Thugonomics, is in the house.
Alright.
We have actually started. Okay, yeah, good. Well, we have been waiting 15 minutes, so we thought we'd get on with it.
You haven't missed much.
We just talked about the seaside so far and a pint
of shandy.
Stewie, when we last left you, I haven't actually seen you for a week. You were off to a lad stag do.
Yes, I was.
How did that all go?
Much fun was had by all, thank you.
Excellent.
Very nice.
Country house it was, wasn't it?
Country house, yeah. Despite you telling everyone on Twitter that I'd gone to Vegas,
sounded more exciting.
I'd gone to the south of Bristol. but yeah, big old party pad, 17 of us. Yeah, good fun.
Good times. Liver all right?
Yeah, still recovering. I was still feeling it on Tuesday. Andy said I looked not at my best when I got into the car on Tuesday.
But you were tired and emotional. Was that the?
Yeah, it just takes that little bit longer to recover, doesn't it? The older you get.
So. I was a bit worried about you Monday and Tuesday. Didn't hear from you, which made me concerned as we pulled out outside your house and then you weren't there either.
I had made a last... Real?
Yeah.
I thought you were joking when you sent that.
No, she wasn't there.
Made a last minute dash to the pharmacy to get some Nurofen Plus. that was the state I was in.
It was a proper four dayer then, was it? You were like balls out for the whole 4 days, so to speak.
Yeah.
And none of us are getting any younger, as you
well,
say.
Well, I find that the older you get, the nights out are less frequent, so when they do come
so you
around, you go harder.
Yeah.
So,
it's
good. We'll continue this chat off air, maybe, in terms of the weekend.
The X-rated stuff, yeah.
That was good, yeah.
Also, things I've been enjoying since we last spoke, Andy, has been your Instagram feed.
I feel like
when
you
talk about this, Andy Walrus on Instagram, follow him. Not a work account, I should stress.
I'll put the usual disclaimer out there. If you want actual football, do not follow my Instagram. You might get some other stuff in there.
You get behind the scenes
You do a little bit. You also get wife and kids and our cat.
Yeah.
So, and dinner. So just be aware of what you're signing up for.
I'm interested in all of you, Andy, not just the football side.
Oh, that's very
But what nice. I will say, there are two things I enjoyed. A, you started a new highlights videos of your cooking skills, your culinary excellence.
Yep.
So you started off, you launched that with your world best scrambled eggs.
Yeah, launched that on Monday, yeah.
So next up, I want to see your speciality Dutch mini pancakes.
Yeah, poffergies.
Poffergies. And what's the other one, the potatoes you talked
about? I do a little papas con mojo, which is a Canarian delicacy. Very nice.
Outstanding. So if there's anything you want Chef Andy to whip up for you and give you the know-how as to how to do it, just ask him. We maybe get a vote going as to what you should do after those two. The other couple of things, town-related, I've enjoyed. Getting locked in.
Yep,
Monday night.
Got locked on the top of the co-op stand on Monday night.
How long were you actually locked in for?
About 20 minutes.
After the 23s game.
So was there genuine peril at some point?
I always felt in control of the situation because there were various lights on and they were aware of my presence, but they didn't seem that bothered about coming to get me, let me down. Which
it's a punishment.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's a bit of a revenge because for the best part of the year, Andy and I tend to be the last ones out the building. We're the ones that the Greg, the stadium manager, and the security people are politely trying to get out while we're still working away. So might be a bit of revenge there. We've stolen enough of their time. They made sure they took some of yours.
It was an interesting experience, though. Like the lights kept going on and off, which was a bit weird.
You were literally the only person there
in the stand. Yeah,
on
just
any
on the
ghosts?
Top tier. No ghosts. the ghost of Ruud van Nistelrooy just around the penalty spot where he dived all those years ago. Just...
Not that you're still bitter about that.
No.
And the other thing, the other thing I enjoyed is a little insight into the world of the Scarlet Lady on the return from Derby.
Yep.
Now,
what do you like about that?
Well, A, that's luxurious, that ride that you're in.
Yeah, it's pretty pimping. Yeah.
You are living the life there, boys, being driven around in that. And you are literally being driven, let's be honest. You're not really doing a lot other than sitting there.
Yeah, we do all right on that front.
That's nice, isn't it? Yep. And also the insight into the tunes. Smooth, was it?
It's very smooth.
Very smooth.
Yep.
Very smooth.
Barry likes smooth.
Mm.
He drives. He can have what he wants on, but it's very smooth.
Top man. So follow Andy Warren on Instagram for all that good stuff. I should also mention, obviously, if it's the first time you've listened to us, hit subscribe on your various podcast provider. You can also find us on various social medias, Facebook, Kings of Anglia, Twitter, Kings of Anglia, and our private Twitters and Instagrams, apart from Stu. Don't follow Stu on Instagram.
No, do follow him on Instagram. Everything he's done on there has been good so far.
He's an enigma. He's posted once.
Exactly, that's why you should follow him.
And he's done a good story.
If something happens, you'll miss it.
That's the point, actually. Do follow Stu on Instagram, because
then
I can bother him to post some stuff. Boys, before we get talking about the football, which is slightly depressing and not so interesting, I also want to big you up for your video Tuesday night, where you managed to find yourself sitting in the seats of the home team at
Frankie Lamp's seat.
I was going to ask you, first of all, is that a special seat? Is it comfy? What's it like?
Yep, they're like those racing chairs, aren't they?
They seem to have them at all the grounds now, don't they? Certainly the newer grounds. Yeah, proper, like...
Heated?
No.
Probably wouldn't turn it on for you.
No.
I don't know, actually.
I think there was some residual heat from Frank Lampard. still knocking around.
Yeah,
very comfortable. Yeah. Very nice.
And you just literally, in these away games, you just wander down.
We seem to have more freedom on our travels to kind of just knock about and explore. Maybe it helps when the press box is that little bit nearer pitch side. We were just sort of a few rows back there, and the press box is on the ground floor, so... At the end, we've been in a couple of dressing. Well, we've been in the dressing rooms at Rotherham and
Exeter,
so far, and then just sat down on the bench down at Derby. But Ipswich were a bit more restricted. There's too many people shouting at you to get off the pitch and stay out of here and
restricted zone.
Yeah,
threatening to lock you in.
Yeah,
imagine worse things could happen than being locked on the top tier as well.
Absolutely. We'll give it a go though. We're trying to come up with some better places to do videos.
Let us know where you want us to go.
Give the boys a shout on Twitter. See what they can do. See if they can get into the bowels of the stadium, behind the scenes stuff. Speaking of football and bowels and stuff that's not very good, the game so far.
That's a seamless segue there.
That was slick. Let's talk about the games then, boys. So obviously we've not done one of these because A, Stu is away Monday, Andy was at the pressers and then went to the under-23s, normally record it Monday morning. So since we last spoke, last Thursday, Town have played Villa.
Yep.
A creditable draw. Andy Warren, you were there.
Very good.
Your thoughts?
Oh, it's good. It's a game changed by a red card. I'm sure I wasn't the only one that, first of all, when Villa scored and then when Tyo Eden was sent off, feared the worst.
It was never a red card, was it? Let's be honest.
No, probably. I think it was very, very harsh. Very harsh. The referee was not good.
It's the reaction of the player for me, because the player goes up and over and then crumples and kind of rolls around a bit, and the ref took a long time to...
He did take a long time. I don't really know why he took a long time. I don't think he was talking to any line. He didn't talk to any linesman or anything. He just took a very long time and mulled it over and showed the second yellow. But both conceding, which... I just feared the worst when that went in, because they'd started really, really well, came out the blocks really fast, were in the game, and I just feared when that goal went in that maybe, oh no, this isn't going to end well. But both on that occasion, they replied really well. They were straight back at it again, and Trevor Chalobah equalised, and then the same after the red card, I feared, oh dear, this is not going to end well, but it did. And to credit to them, they were trying to win the game in the kind of a restrained way, but until the end, which you really don't see that often with a 55 minute whatever it was hanging on with 10 men. They were still pushing, and so many positives out of that.
Okay, so performance this season so far has been followed by the trip to Derby and defeat Tuesday night. So you were back in the fold for that. Your thoughts?
I can't really decide what I think about Tuesday night, because I could make an argument for it being another game where you could draw plenty of positives from. It's kind of a glass half full, glass half empty situation, because Derby weren't great, they weren't anything special. Bart didn't have loads of saves to make. Ipswich were always in the game. The home crowd were getting a bit edgy and nervy, and they were never really outplayed. But on the flip side of that, they didn't carry enough of a goal threat themselves. They played some nice stuff in patches. And then you can start to look at the fact that Harrison is looking a little isolated again up front. I don't know. Saturday, I think, you know, by the sounds of the energy that went into that 10-man effort that Andy's just talked about, I think maybe that did have a knock-on effect a few days later. They've started fast in all of their games up until Tuesday night, and they weren't quite as fast out the blocks on Tuesday night, and it just lacked maybe that energy that is required in this system and the way Hurst wants them to play. So I don't put too much stock into what happened Tuesday night.
Okay. That was the first one that I've come away from feeling a bit though.
Meh.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily, it wasn't awful, certainly wasn't awful, but all of the other ones I've been really quite encouraged by 60-70% of what we saw. Tuesday for me was just a bit meh.
And you weren't that impressed with Frank Lampard's Derby County, as they have to be officially
called?
No,
not particularly. I think they certainly have more threat about them than Ipswich. They look more incisive, and their forward players looked like making stuff happen, but they weren't anything special.
Obscene level of talent on that team, though. I mean, Waghorn didn't even get off the bench.
It's quite galling, isn't it? They've taken Ipswich's best player and then didn't need him.
Yeah, he was quite unlucky not to play, apparently. I was chatting to one of our counterparts at Derby and said he played on the Saturday and played quite well at Millwall by all accounts. But
Marriott came on though, didn't he? Did he show much of anything?
Game was won by that point. It was, you know, it was that situation where it was 2-0, and you know, it was just that situation really. But I mean, ultimately, it's two deflected goals, isn't it? We have to say that. I probably didn't fully appreciate that at the time from where we were sat, but small but crucial deflections that have deceived players and the goalkeeper on both occasions. Ultimately, that's the difference in what was a pretty fine margins affair. So we move on to the next one. But of course, the longer the wait for a win goes on, everyone just gets a little bit more edgy and nervy, and they could do with just getting that under their belt.
It's the goal threat. That's the thing. Like we talk about deflected goals there. I didn't see Ipswich scoring. They wouldn't have. I don't think they'd have won that game even if those goals hadn't gone in.
Yeah.
The goal threat just wasn't there.
Shall we talk about this then? Because obviously, post-match on social since then, the big chat has been, he's got to play two up front. But it's not that simple, is it? Or is it?
Well, we talked about this briefly in our little video that we did in Frank's seat. I like the system. I really do. And you see teams playing it. Like Derby played it. Villa played it. Teams play it and make it work. But they make it work by getting people up and beyond the striker. Out wide, a bit more support from both flanks, and like Stu said in the video, you attack as one, it's work as a unit, and I don't think that's quite happening. It's just isolated striker. I've seen enough from Harrison to think that he can play that role.
To be honest, just fair to him, he puts himself around, doesn't he? Buries himself in terms of running for the cause and stuff.
Yeah, it didn't happen for him on Tuesday, did it? It was bouncing off him, he wasn't able to make it stick. But I like the system. There's just, and I don't think it's as simple as just sticking another striker up there. I don't think it would change anything. I don't. I think you need to find a way of supporting whoever is up there more.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's too black and white way of looking at it. Just put another striker in there. I think, you know, they're working on a new system, a new way of playing. I think it's important that they commit to that project and really work on getting that right. I do think two up front could be a decent plan B option. And I thought once they went 2-0 down on Tuesday night, then maybe that would have been a time just to, you know, almost just chuck on another striker and see what happened. I know Hurst has done that in the past at Shrewsbury. I read a lot of his quotes where he said, you know, I'd rather go down fighting. If we go 2-0 down, he'll go sort of all out attack. And as he said, if you get one goal, even if it's in the 88th minute, then suddenly the whole dynamic changes and you suddenly see the home crowd get nervy and who knows. But he was very frustrated that Jordan Roberts, who came on as a sub, put in two very dangerous balls towards the end and there wasn't enough Ipswich players gambling on them and committing to the box. And I think there's two big parts of the Paul Hurst way of playing, which is the high press and also committing bodies to the box in terms of attack. And I don't think either of those are quite to the standard that Paul Hurst wants at the moment.
I think that comes down to the deeper two midfielders. We're not just talking about a front four here. If you're attacking, I think you need to be attacking with those two as well. They're the players that need to be getting in the box, because Nolan should be there anyway as the more advanced one. If you're going to gamble and put men in the box, you need them. If Roberts is crossing the ball, Gwion Edwards, or he was off by that point, wasn't he? But he needs to be the one attacking the back post, and you need Cole Skews and Trevor Chalabar either on the edge of the box or attacking in the box, and they're the ones that aren't getting up high enough for me, which meant the whole team is kind of sitting back a little bit. If we can get those two pushed up, that creates a real attacking unit and pushes Nolan up with him, because Nolan doesn't want to get too far away from the other two central midfielders. Otherwise, if you're stretching out kind of, I'm doing hand signals here, I don't know why this isn't coming across on a podcast, but if you're stretching out like that, that's leaving your team stretched. You need to up and back as one. And I can see that's a frustration for Paul, because that's what he wants. And he said as much after the Exeter game, didn't he, about midfielders sticking too close together and not using the ball. I think that's what he wants. Those two need to get more involved.
Yeah, not convinced the balance of the midfield is quite right at the moment, whether that's personnel or the way they're operating. Do you need Skews and Chalabar both in there? Perhaps for certain games, for others maybe not. And Emir Hughes back for the 23s on Monday. To me, he'll be kind of a good balancing act for, you know, Nolan can go and attack and do some of the more silky stuff in the final third, Skews / Chalabar doing some of the deeper lying stuff, and then Hughes can be almost sort of the link box to box man that knits it all together.
Can we talk about the under 23s briefly?
Because absolutely.
I think that's quite important in all this, and a reason why they're not going to abandon everything they're doing and just go to two up front, because the 23s played this system on Monday, admittedly against a very young, mismatched Hull team. But for me, it was a perfect example of how that should work. They were doing it against an opposition that allowed them to do it. But Josh Emmanuel from fullback and Bailey Clements are the other left back. They were getting up and more involved in play. And the midfield three was Emir Hughes was sitting in one of the deeper roles. I think that was more due to where he is fitness-wise rather than where he would play. But Hughes was deep. And then Idris El-Mazouni and Shane McLaughlin were in the other midfield roles, and they were getting up and supporting Ben Morris more and more. Jack Lancaster right, and on the left I have forgotten who it was, but that it was working how it was supposed to work. I think I don't know if Paul was at the game on Monday, but I'm sure he's watched it and he'll have looked at that and seen his system maybe working how he'd like it to.
That's encouraging though, isn't it? There's that kind of connectivity between that team and the first team, which obviously wasn't the case necessarily under Mick.
That's massive, isn't it? That was a part of the mission statement. There was a kind of academy mission statement. I think you spoke to the academy manager in the summer, didn't you?
Yeah, Lee O'Neill. It's obviously a big part of what Evans has outlined, that there needs to be some more joined up thinking from academy through to first team, which is just common sense, isn't it? But I think there's always been a sense, and people at the club weren't always willing to say this publicly, because, you know, you don't for political reasons and diplomatic reasons, but I think there was a sense that the academy was playing a certain way, players were being raised a certain way, and then was wanting something completely different when they got to the first team. So there was that disconnect there, and hopefully now that's sort of getting them ready for the first team environment that little bit more.
Danny Rowe was playing on the left wing.
Danny Rowe
scored a hat trick.
He's got a hat trick.
This isn't. I watch a fair amount of Dutch football, and this is very much kind of the Ajax way of thinking. And it's no coincidence that the Ajax first team every summer, pretty much they sell their two best players, and all of them from nowhere. Another 18-year-old emerges that slips straight into that first team, and it looks like he's been there all his life, because he's been through this system playing exactly the same way, very, very rigid. They play 4-3-3, and you do not play anything else if you're the Ajax manager. and they slip straight in. It works. It's just a question of getting it going.
It's a balancing act between having an identity, a firm identity, which I think Ipswich have lost in recent years. And everyone knew what Ipswich were about when they made the playoffs under Mick, and it was direct, and it was generally 4-4-2, and they did what they did well. And then they were kind of, the last couple of years, they'd been scratching about for a system. You know, Mick stumbled upon a back three. I mean, this whole sort of Mick's a dinosaur and he only ever plays 4-4-2. I mean, he tried everything in the last year or so. They played every formation going, 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, wing-backs. And that was part of the issue, to be honest. I think it's difficult for players to keep switching all the time. I think, you know, you get very limited time on the training field in the hurly-burly of the Championship, Saturday, Tuesday. You know, it'll be good once they get, I think that's important to say as well, they haven't had a lot of time for Hurst to really work on systems. Leading up to the Norwich game, they'll get a firm week on the training pitch. Norwich have got an away game in the Cup at Cardiff that week. So Hurst will be able to really, I don't think he probably feels like he's had time to really work with his players yet at the moment, so give it time.
Hot take: Ipswich Town will not secure their first win under Paul Hurst at Sheffield Wednesday this weekend, but instead will triumphantly secure that win in the East Anglian derby.
We have all at various points, I think, guaranteed that Town are going to beat.
I have
Norwich.
Not done that yet.
That's
my colours on the mast, and that will be the first win, and it will be wonderful.
Lift off.
It'll be brilliant.
So I look forward to the Jordan Rose hat-trick at Portman Road.
Win 4-3 then.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
It'll be a draw on Saturday.
For me, there's an obvious solution to the current problems at Ipswich Town, and his name is
Aaron Drynan.
Bring him back.
He's not found the net for Sutton
yet.
So
he's
maybe
biding his time, isn't he? Biding his time. Yeah. He knows he's got a big rest of season ahead of him at Town. He's keeping his powder dry. Mm. Let's talk about, before we move on, the kind of bigger issue surrounding Town at the moment, which obviously you've touched on already, Stu, but 5 games in, no wins, out of the cup again. People on social media, obviously some people on social media, getting the old collie wobbles. It's really, really, I mean, how important is it that he gets that first win under his belt? Because it's the longer it goes on, it's only going to intensify.
It will calm everybody down a little bit, and like people keep now starting to go, well, when can we worry? When's the time to worry? And there seems to be a fair mix among fans. A lot of people saying, you know, this is a new project, completely new team, new manager. This is what we wanted. We wanted change. We now need to trust in the project. But there is an element going, well, you know, we're just chatting to a colleague here in the office who I'll rename unnamed, but saying, you know, you get
an angry man.
Get a third tier manager and third tier players, and that's where you're going to end up. And there is that school of thought. So just to calm all of that down, it would be nice to get the first win on the board, especially prior to the international break.
Can I read out a tweet at this point?
Yeah.
That you and I both were tagged into from Rodney Marshall.
Good old Rodney.
He looks a lot like Pierluigi Tolina. We at ITFC were told we told ITFC in no uncertain terms that we were sick of Mick McCarthy's fast food football. It was giving us indigestion. A new chef comes in, is busy sourcing ingredients and planning a recipe. If fans cannot wait, then go to McDonald's on a Saturday afternoon.
Very good, Rodney.
I like the chef analogy.
Yeah.
It works. He is sourcing ingredients. He's working, he's getting it right, and I've had a little taste so far, and I quite liked what I've tasted.
Yeah.
I'm not finished the dish yet, though.
It's not Michelin style quality just
yet. Not yet, but he's, you know,
it's getting
I've
there.
Had a little bit of the sauce, I've had a little bit of the mushrooms on the side. Nice.
Yeah, I think from the individual components, if we're going to continue this analogy, like of the dish, I like what I've seen from the bits and pieces. It's just not all come together yet, but Enciala looks like a real beast at the back. He's, you know, he's got the pace and the aggression, but to me they're going to take a bit of time learning what the Championship is about, because there are tackles that he's been making that he's not going to get away with the higher up you go, because he's lunging in, and as a former centre back myself, I love it. You know, I don't want to take that away from the game, but players are a bit cuter, they're that little bit faster the higher up you go. And there have been a couple that have, you know, the Lawrence free kick, I probably didn't think was a free kick, but Lawrence is just that bit cuter to initiate the contact and go down, and you can't give the referee the opportunity to give those. It was the same with the Rotherham goal, led from, again, I thought he probably won the ball, but he's gone in hard and strong, and he's given the referee the opportunity to do that. So that's just a little bit of experience that will come into play. But I like what we've seen from Enciala. Likewise with Nolan, I think he's shown he's more than skillful enough for this level. Like, you know, ball glued to his feet. He's a very tricky little player.
Danasian has, the last two games, Danasian's been
he's been
very, very good.
Because I have to say, what I've seen from him, certainly on opening day and kind of reading your reports, like before that, he's not been that impressive, had he?
But he was the one I was worried
about.
He's
really stepped up.
He was the one I was worried about a little bit.
JD?
JD. Albert Adoma, he looked after him all afternoon. He did the same largely with Tom Lawrence.
Yeah, Lawrence in his pocket for most of the game. And I'm talking about Enciala diving in. The thing that really impressed me about him is that he's just a very composed fullback. You know, direct wingers running at him, and he just stands up. He reads the game. And then he'll just step in perfectly, win the ball, still be on his feet, and away you go. And I think there's more to come from him in an attacking sense. But Caden Jackson, his former Accrington teammate, told us, you know, that very few wingers get the better of him in League Two last season, and we're starting to see a bit of that. So all the players, with going back to this, you get League Two players, League One players, that's what you get. I think all of these players have shown that I think they'll be able to take this step up. It's now just getting them together as a team over the coming weeks.
So the ingredients are good.
The raw ingredients. The provenance is good.
Just got to season it now.
Yeah.
Well, the key is in the seasoning, and that's Paul Hurst's job. He's got the ingredients. He just needs to get it all nicely seasoned.
I personally think you should dump it all in the bin. Hurst experiment over. What we need now is an old head. Somebody who can really grind out performances. Every point's a prisoner. You know what I'm talking about, boys.
I know what you're saying, but I want you to say it, because this is a big moment.
Of course.
If this is what you're saying.
No, of course, I am joking. I am very much joking. But, hot take, old Mick McCarthy, dinosaur, the ghost of Christmas past, he'll be in charge of QPR by the end of October.
I like the take.
Yeah, we did start talking about that even prior to the weekend, that QPR... obviously not had a great start under Steve McLaren. I think a London job would suit Mick down to the ground as well. So
it's going to happen.
Wouldn't rule it out.
Absolutely going
to
happen.
You'd love that. Mick McCarthy in West London. Yes, please. Yes, please.
That would be fun, won't it, when Ipswich inevitably come up
against Mick at some point. We want him coming back here at some point.
Just for the
bants.
Ipswich go there on Boxing Day, so that I don't know when QPR come here, but I imagine that will then be after Christmas. So
outstanding.
Well, I look forward to that. People keep saying to me, "Oh, it's going to be awkward when you see Mick again." I like to think. Well,
I think I think it'll be quite warm towards
you.
We
exchanged a few texts over the summer and wished each other well. It's all
football friends.
Well, it's all part of, you know. I think there's a mutual appreciation that both of you are just doing your jobs at the end of the day. So. Yeah, there's no real feeling there. I look forward to seeing Mick. I think most fans don't have ill feeling towards him, and then they'll always have good memories of the early days. But just got a bit stale, didn't it? So
I think if he does manage against Ipswich, the narrative of his reception will be written by what he says in the build up.
Yeah,
I can if he talks about how much he enjoyed his time, how much he enjoyed it, he'll get a big round of applause. But if he decides to take a different route, like he did at times towards the end, then I think it could be a bit of a pantomime. And it would be a pantomime villain kind of thing at Portman Road, I think. But either way, I think he'll absolutely love it. Whichever way round it happens, he'll have a massive grin on his face.
So look out for that. Before we move on, boys, need to get behind the scenes stuff at Pride Park. Fortress Pride Park, which I imagine is... like a palace to work at. Good Wi-Fi, good food, facilities, excellent.
And, food. Well, let's start with food.
Can I have a mint first, Mark?
Of course you can, my friend.
Before we start this, thank you.
Help yourself. We are still looking for a sponsor.
Food was good, we got there. I might have a breakthrough on the sponsor front.
Oh, breaking news.
You'll like.
Breaking news.
Well, it's not a specific sponsor request. I think that they've emailed me a couple of town fans who run a online beer delivery service.
I'm liking the sound of this.
I've had three beers this year.
Yeah. Contacted me to say, would we like to do something on them? So we'll resume that chat after this.
Excellent.
I like that. Beer's one of my key food groups.
Beer,
so, I'm
football,
in there.
Marriage made in heaven.
Yeah. Seamless. Again, I'm doing hand movements. You can't see it on the podcast, but...
Excellent.
Yeah.
Food, Derby. We rock up. Lovely little chicken pie with some vegetables and potatoes. Unfortunately, Andy had had the very same meal just a few hours earlier at home. Yeah. So,
was there a stop, by the way, on the way? Do you stop?
We did have a stop because we needed to find our photographer, actually. He was lost in action. He had a job in London during the day and he was expecting to get back to meet us but didn't. So we ended up picking him up from a BP garage somewhere. I don't know where we were.
Yeah. What, he's just left his car at the garage?
No, his wife drove him there from London. Wow. Yeah. We had a little ice cream there, didn't we, actually?
Yep.
Little McFlurry action while we were waiting for Warren. Yeah, so no official stop, but ice cream.
So you get a main food source and you get accompaniments at Pride Park as opposed to just a standard pie.
Yeah, this was more of a meal. This was dished up on a plate with... Yeah, it was good.
I didn't have any.
I'd expect no less.
Simon Grayson was in the press box, room, tucking into that.
Yep.
Jobless manager at the moment. Just I don't know who he was working for. He was on radio with, I think maybe TalkSport.
He was just in a pair of jeans and a flannel polo shirt.
Sports cash.
Yeah, very
sat casual. All on his own when we got there. It was a little bit sad to sort of see him just a manager just sat there on his own. Paul Anderson we saw as well, who was Brenner Woolley's co-commentator for BBC Suffolk. So it was good
legend
to catch,
in these parts.
Good to catch up with him. Yeah. A lovely man.
Where is he now, Paul Anderson?
Mansfield.
I don't know, was he injured or was he just, they didn't have a game? I don't know what the situation was. But I had a brief chat with him, that was nice.
Good stuff. Now then, again, moving on, we kind of teased this chat last week and it is still relevant given what's going on town-wise at the moment. Again, bringing people in, talking about your working lives. Let's talk about the verdict, because at some point over the next few days, you're going to be penning verdicts. Just a little bit of background to the verdict. We started it, what, two or three seasons ago?
Maybe the playoff season we started doing it.
As a kind of way of having a kind of something new on the back page on a Monday, which wasn't just the same old quotes from players. I think there was a sense that
come Mondays now, everything around the game it moves on so quickly, doesn't it? You know, it's old hat, the quotes are, everyone's seen them by Saturday evening. So we have to come up with a new USP, reason for people to go and buy the paper, so it's becoming more analytical and verdict-y, and so we did sort of opinion pieces on the back page, so we've been doing that, haven't we, for a while.
It's what we call in the trade comment or opinion, and it's probably...
Also what people outside of the trade call it as well.
Well, true, yeah. But Stewie, obviously you're the one tasked with writing it most of the time. Now, I know last season you did not enjoy writing the verdict.
No.
I remember specifically every Sunday you'd go very quiet when you were writing the verdict, and then kind of emerge afterwards saying, thank God that's finished.
Yeah.
So just to explain, I mean, it is obviously a difficult thing to write, to go come up with something every week that doesn't paint yourself into a corner.
That is essentially it, because it's got to be strong enough in tone to be interesting.
Yeah.
It can't just be grey and sitting on the fence and because no one's going to want to read that. But at the same time, you're very conscious, as you say, about painting yourself into a corner. You know, this is all going terribly. It's, you know, manager out, blah, blah, blah. And then they suddenly win their next three out of nowhere and you end up looking a little bit silly and vice versa. And it's kind of, the situation has flipped now in terms of we're wanting to be cautiously positive and be patient and all the rest of it. But if it doesn't pick up, I still think it will, and we've said that, but if it doesn't, you know, people will be chucking back the positive stuff we've been writing. Oh, do you still believe in that? And I'm already getting that now in terms of saying that I thought Hurst was the right type of appointment for Ipswich and all the rest of it. You know, just four games, five games in, people are going, oh, do you still think that now? And so you just got to try and you're treading on eggshells with, in terms of, you know, trying to represent what you think hopefully is the overall mood of the fans. They're mood setters, aren't they? That's the way we sort of look at them. But you're never going to represent everybody amongst the fan base. You're also trying to keep a reasonable working relationship with the club. There's a lot of thought that goes into those, literally down to the, you know, just the wording of things, the odd word here and there can make the difference.
Should also stress, specifically probably towards the end of the Mick reign, there was some suggestions that occasionally you were perhaps being told what to write. But
yeah, that's nonsense.
That's complete. I mean, obviously, I can say because I've been sports editor here the entire time you've been doing the town job, and never have you ever been told what to write. There's never been any discussion along those lines.
I don't think anyone at Ipswich would ever consider telling you what to write. Mm. They might tell you after you've written it that they didn't like it, but I don't think anybody at Ipswich would ever.
Well, first of all, no one internally here tells me what to write, and I think that does happen at other places.
That's it. That was the accusation, wasn't it? There was some kind of bias.
So
here.
I'm very fortunate in that, you know, yourself and
you got a great
and
boss,
the editors
saying,
just let trust me to get on with it. So that's good. And yeah, in terms of the club, I might get a bit of feedback afterwards from people saying thought that was a bit harsh. And we had incidents last year where Ian Milne was made it clear he wasn't happy, that he felt that the tone of the paper was too negative. And at the same time, we had a lot of fans saying, why aren't you asking tougher questions? So, and that's the same with the questioning at press conferences as well. So for me, I think we said this a lot last year, while you get both of those accusations at the same time in the club's pocket slash too critical, then that probably means that you're somewhere down the middle. But it's not easy. You're never going to please everyone.
Absolutely.
I do them occasionally, and I am tempted to come in and just mess up the narrative a little
bit. Hurst out by Stuart Watson.
Yeah. Just completely change the narrative for the time when Stu comes back.
Yeah, it is like there's a definite skill involved in writing stuff like that. I mean, Stewie, you're the doctor. I hope you don't mind me saying you excel at writing comment pieces. I just want for people to appreciate that it's not literally just chucked on a page. It takes a long time. You kind of sit there and stroke your chin and, you know, that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean, though? It's not just kind of thrown out there willy-nilly without any kind of consideration as to what you're writing.
No, thought goes so, into it, whether you like it or not. That's what we're trying to say, is that we do put quite a lot of thought into it. And, I do then spend a lot of time wondering if we've got the right tone. But, the feedback's been pretty good over the last 6 months or so. I think people realise that it wasn't a particularly easy 6 months to report on towards the end of the Mick era. So the bottom line is we want them to do well, and it makes our job so much easier when things are better. Players want to speak to you. The stuff just flows a lot easier when you're writing. We sell more papers. We get more views on our website. So
can be more creative as well, because have more fun with football. Football's fun, and if the general mood around the club is fun, we can have more fun. And it's all about us having fun, really, at the end of the day, isn't
it? It's no coincidence that these have been a bit more fun and lighter to record.
Yeah.
And the stuff that we've been doing is, and hopefully that sort of shows. And that's because the general mood surrounding the club is a bit lighter. I mean, it'd be interesting to see whether we're still talking about eating a big porker on the way to games if town are bottom or whatever, you know, midway through the season. Is that appropriate?
You'll still be eating a big porker.
Yeah.
This is a perfect.
Your diet doesn't change.
This is a perfect time to jump into mailbag, because the first question on mailbag from Simon is, will a hashtag big porker be consumed on the way to Sheffield?
What else is going on hashtag big porker?
I'm not sure I want to click on that, but I will. Let's have a look. Let's have a look if there was anything else.
Alarm's going off in IT right now.
Yeah, yeah.
On your company phone.
He's looking at big porkers again.
Will I be consuming a big porker?
We will be stopping at the OK Diner on the way to Sheffield. It's booked in.
I wasn't desperate to go back in for one. Goodness me.
Actually, is a big porker.
I feel like I wasn't desperate to have another one, but I also feel like it's become my trademark now, so I'm not going
to
rule it out.
If you do, need to get a little picture out there of it so everyone can both marvel at it and OK Diner can see that we are a vehicle for advertisement and get involved.
The Kings of Anglia podcast brought you in association with the Big Porker. Stewie, okay. So if you do have a Big Porker, I want to see it on Instagram, please, on a story or a picture. Harry Butcher, please just tell Andy and Stu what a wonderful job they do. That's nice, Harry.
It's very nice.
Thanks,
I'll be the judge of that, though, Harry, and they're sort of mediocre to average.
Bang
at
average,
the moment.
Yeah.
Rodney Marshall, why do football fans have this culture of impatience? It takes time for a new manager to source ingredients. This is the geezer we talked about earlier, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
He loves his food analogies.
Has he gone back in?
Yeah, yeah. Everyone seems to demand fast food football, in other words, instant success. Good point well made, Rodney. Firmski, what positions do you see as key to filling with loans to make the system Paul Hurst is working towards click? I have actually skipped over completely part of the plan, haven't I, there, boys?
Yeah.
There's something that says transfers, moves in and out ahead of deadline day.
We'll
so
come back to
we'll
that.
We'll do that after the
moment. Yeah.
Key signings.
I think they need another winger. I think that's more arguably more important than another central defender at the moment, because I honestly think that everything that this Hurst system really relies on the wingers being exactly what Hurst wants. I think he's only got one of them at the moment.
Yeah,
in Edwards, the exact mould that he wants.
Who was below par on Tuesday night. He was quiet, and I don't think that that's any coincidence that Ipswich suddenly carried far less of a goal threat when Edwards wasn't on it. And wingers are going to have those sort of days where they can't work their way into games. I'm with you, I think. I know people are now saying go out and get an experienced striker to lead the line because they're concerned about that. I think that's too simplistic a viewpoint. You've got Harrison, you've got Jackson. Do you now need to go out and get an championship experienced striker that's taken up a hefty chunk of your wage bill to restrict those other two?
I do think they need a striker. I don't think they should be going out, like you just said, I don't think they should be going out and breaking the bank for one that comes in and demands to start. I think they perhaps need another in the mould of Harrison a little bit so that he's not shouldering that. I've called them Thunder and Lightning, which I'm going to push on with.
That, my friend's inspired.
Yeah, but I think they need another Thunder.
More Thunder.
They've only got one Thunder. And if Harrison somehow, if he gets injured, if things don't quite pan out how we think it might with him, they need another one because he plays in a very certain way that Jackson doesn't. And I think they need another option for Harrison, because Freddie Sears certainly can't be the Thunder. He could perhaps be the Lightning.
Important question. If Harrison's a Thunder, Jackson's the Lightning.
Yep.
What's Aaron Dryden?
On loan at Sutton.
Bit of drizzle.
The after drizzle.
Yeah. Don't slag my boy off. Kevin Mays, you like this question, Andy. Is the current problem not one up top, but two defensive-minded midfielders? Probably due to availability. Hughes or Bishop instead of Trev or Skews will allow Nolan to get forward more.
Yeah. We kind of covered that earlier, didn't we? Yeah. Balance of that midfield, and I think Hughes could be the one. They haven't had that balance in midfield for ages, and to be fair to Mick McCarthy, I think he went into last season expecting his midfield three to be Skews, Hughes, Adeyemi, ever able to do it. And you've got the balance of somebody who sits and protects in Skews, somebody who's a playmaker, and somebody who's a final third creative force. And I think they're still just working their way towards getting that balance still.
Emir looked good in the under-23s though. He played 45 minutes and clearly there was a bit of a handbrake on, but he was chucking himself into tackles. He had one kind of header that he went up for and ended up going up and over his man, and sort of every time he clatters to the pitch, you kind of, you know, when players are coming
sharp
back, you
take
fear
a breath,
he's fine. He looked really well. He was sweeping the ball around and sort of inside the first minute he picked the ball up in midfield and drove forward towards the box, so promising. I'm sure he's still a few weeks away though.
Just on the Skews Shalabar thing, I think we've both noted that Shalabar, and we must remember this is a man who's playing his first few games in senior football, just because he's a big lad you kind of forget that sometimes, but he has faded in the latter parts of games. He looks like a 70 minute player at the moment. He looked on Tuesday like he was a little bit tired, that the first start to the season's just taken its toll a little bit. So I'm not convinced he's going to be like Sessegnon and play 46 games and all the rest of it. And Skews, to me, I'm not sure that sort of slightly more advanced central midfield role is bringing out the best of his qualities, I have to say, so far.
I'd switch them. If you're playing those two, I'd play got Shalabar a little bit more advanced of Skews, and I think he looks a better player when he's having to be instinctive. He makes his mistakes and gives the ball away when he's got time to think and is not doing things on instinct and quickly. Put him in the thick of it where he doesn't have time to mull over what he's going to do and he just has to play on instinct. He's clearly a class footballer. He's got a swagger about him, and he knows what he's doing, but he looks like one that works on instinct to me. If he has to ponder, I think that's when he lapses concentration.
Goodness me, we've had a lot of questions, boys. Let's
keep going.
Let's try and get through these. We've got Joshua Smith. Do you think Jackson should start up front ahead of Harrison, or should Hurst start both up front against Sheffield Wednesday?
Lightning and thunder. I don't know if that works the other way round. So
you can't have lightning without thunder.
Yeah, but you can't have lightning before thunder. I'm not sure I would necessarily play that system with Jackson as the starting player necessarily.
Okay.
Depends on the opposition, I think. I don't know. I haven't started to look at Sheffield Wednesday's team, but it depends on the sort of centre backs that you're up against. If you've got two big lumps that are great in the air, then there might be occasions where you think Jackson running in behind is a better option.
I'd like to see him as well. I know Paul said it's stressed that he's brought him in as a central striker. I'd be honest, I'd quite like to see him as one of the wide players, just to see what having Edwards on one side, Jackson on the other, what that could bring. I'd like to see that.
Hmm. Ed Barker, he can tell you a thing or two about big porkers because he's a senior policy advisor for the National Pig Association. Excellent. Hello, Ed. what do the club do if, in the kind of hashtags, if we are sat here in a month without a win still under our belt or in the relegation zone at Christmas? Accept League One and rebuild, or join the sack race brigade? The doctor, that's got your name written all over it.
I think it would take extraordinarily bad set of circumstances for Evans to even consider changing manager this season. I think you'd almost have to be in danger of being cut adrift, because I know people have talked about going down would be a good thing for Ipswich, and they cite Norwich and Southampton as examples that sometimes you need to go down to come back stronger. For me, Ipswich infrastructure-wise, and that would be a disaster. I think they would be a club a bit like, well, both Sheffield clubs went down, Leicester. There's been some big clubs that have taken a long time to come back from League One or haven't come back.
Mm.
So I don't. There would come a point where if you were in danger of getting cut adrift, that might have to be that might have to come into consideration. But I don't think it will ever get close to that. You know, if it's just a case of flirting with the playoffs and a bit like now, you know, the points are just sort of dribbling along, but they're okay, then there'll be no consideration.
Okay.
No.
Zach, go back a year. This time last year, Ipswich had won all of their first five games, and everyone was talking about promotion. Ended up finishing 12th. Mm. I think the exact same thing's going to happen this year, but in reverse.
Okay. Zach Ward, formerly of this parish, do you remember Zach?
Yes.
He came on Work Experience, very smiley. Right, Zach, thanks for your question.
Very smiley.
He was. He had a great smile, didn't he, Zach? He was always smiling.
As good as Hollywood Hurst's smile.
I
noticed you've called off on the nickname as well.
I haven't actually mentioned Hurst this week, have I?
No.
I'm going to double down on Hollywood, just as Stu suggested. He's Hollywood to me and will always be.
Correct.
Zach Ward said, have we signed too many players in too short a space of time, too short on Championship experience? I can't shake a worrying feeling. We've replaced Championship quality in Webster, Waghorn and Garner with ready replacements. I'm all for opportunity, but I can't shake the worry. Now, with that, I'm going to let you talk about that. And just excuse myself for a second. I've had far too much coffee again.
All right, see ya.
Talk amongst yourselves.
This has happened before, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've broken the seal.
Maybe go before we start recording. Yeah.
Anyway, talk amongst yourselves on that.
Right, where do we start?
Can you remember the question?
Yeah,
we're all right. Off you go. Go get yourself sorted.
One thing I'd say about that is Adam Webster. People were talking about Adam Webster losing Championship experience. He's gone, by the way.
Are we really going to talk about the football while he's gone?
We'll just carry on, yeah.
We'll just talk about him quickly.
Webster was a player that had come from League Two, and suddenly we're now talking about him as being an established Championship player based on an encouraging but injury hit, 2 years that he had at Ipswich. So you've got to trust that the players that they're bringing in have got the, in another year's time, 2 years' time, we're talking about them as established Championship players. I do get the concerns. I do get that. But what was the alternative? The alternative was to be sticking with the same old tried and trusted, experienced, established name. Safe was the word. Cautious. You know, we know it will work to a certain extent. they needed to try something different, didn't they?
But this isn't a one-year project, is it? It's not. If we were talking about Paul Hurst is coming in, he's got a year, he's got to get Ipswich Town in the playoffs, I think he would have taken a very different approach to what he's doing. It isn't. This is the start of something new. We're five games into the start of something new. I like what he's doing. Ipswich have got a good history of taking players from lower leagues and younger players and turning them into things. Look at Matt Holland, for example, was brought up from lower divisions.
Even more recently, Cresswell, Mings, you know, yeah. People forget where they came from as well. Premier League players now.
There's loads. John Walters was another one, came from Chester, I think were League Two at the time. But they might have even been National League.
Don't think that the gap in quality between the lower leagues all the way through to the Premier League, perhaps, is that great. I think the difference is what is between the years. It's the desire, it's the professionalism, it's the wanting to learn, it's taking on instructions. And I think Paul Hurst has prioritised those qualities as much as he has their ability. He wants players that he feels are prepared to learn and listen. You know, Katie made a big point of saying Caden Jackson is someone who's matured as a man, as a character, since he worked with him at Grimsby, and I think that was very important to him.
He did this at Shrewsbury as well, didn't he? He came in October time, didn't he? He took that job October 2016, and there was a big turnover of players, and look, within 18 months he'd turned them from, he both saved them from relegation and had them in the League One playoff final. He's got form on this. Yeah. He has a plan, he knows what he's doing, and for the moment, and I'm more than happy to watch him do it. We shouldn't have said all those bad things about Mark, should we? He's back.
I'll hear him.
All right.
Yeah, that's a better voice, thank you very much.
All good?
I've got to drink three coffees before we sit down to record this. How are we getting on? Where are we?
Where are we finished?
Yeah, all right. No, and the other point I'd make on that is just that they're not all kids as well. You know, Nolan, Enciala, they're 26 years of age. They're players that are in their prime. You're not talking about a team that's completely wet behind the ears. They've all got plenty of good experience of playing for points and with things at stake. So I know where people are coming from, but even going back to Garner and Waghorn, you know, they'd come down from Scotland and people weren't jumping up and down with excitement at those two signing. I think last year they certainly didn't envisage the situation that they'd be in now a year later, so let's give them a chance and see what they do.
Here's a good one. The Tractor. Appreciate the work you two do. Nice. And you give your honest opinions, but after helping give Mick enough rope to talk himself out of a job, aren't you currently cheerleading an unfolding car crash?
Yeah, no, I can see what people are saying. I don't think we gave Mick that rope. I would actually go as far as saying this is what frustrated me with Mick at times, because there was a sense that we were the ones that were initiating and driving the narrative about things were going stale. And the questions that I served up to Mick, and I've used this analogy before, were quite often underarm deliveries that were, you know, that were begging for a nice positive response. And he was playing the forward defensive all the time, and he was perceiving criticism where it wasn't there. And I keep saying, we want the team to do well. I wanted things to get better. But Mick had got so entrenched in this us against the world mentality. And he was not only was he, fair enough, managers, some of them need to do that to push the media away and use them as the enemy, fine. But he started to me, the media are the conduit to the fans. Forget that you're speaking to somebody, three, four, five journalists in that room, and remember that you're on camera to your bigger audience. And it was as much of the way he spoke last season as to the way the football was that kind of did for that PR disaster in the end. And this is what I like about Paul Hurst at the moment is that he explains his thought process in detail to the media, therefore the fans, and I think people now, that is going to buy him a lot of time, because this is what I'm trying to do, and this is why I'm doing it, and I think it's bringing fans on the journey with him.
Yeah, he's been quite open as well, hasn't he, saying, look, it might not work out. And if it doesn't work out, I want to say that I've been, you know, giving it my all and I've had no regrets. So I agree with you there, Stewie. Craig.
And what's the alternative to us not cheerleading at the moment? You know, if we started like really sort of ratcheting up, this could all go horribly wrong all the time, then I don't think that's really the right position to be in. It's a fresh start. We were well behind Mick from the very start. Go back to all the stuff we were saying during the playoff season, even post-playoff season, even at the start of last season. If you pull up some of our back pages and look at some of the cheerleading, if you want to use that phrase, headlines that we used, it was only really post-Christmas when there really wasn't a huge alternative that we had to kind of reflect the mood. And I do think it was a reflection of the mood rather than a creation of the mood. But I know not everyone will agree with that.
My personal opinion on that whole Mick thing is he talked himself out of a job, essentially. And I still, you know, had he been a little bit more conciliatory with the fans... Because he can, I mean, you saw sometimes in the press conferences, in Facebook Lives, he can be a really engaging, open, kind of charismatic guy, can't he? It's just that he chose the wrong times to pick fights and slag people off. And I think ultimately he talked himself out of a job. He got to a point where Evans couldn't continue with him. Mm. And I still think maybe 5 or 10 years down the line, if Mick McCarthy does think in this way, I think he might sit there with his pint of John Smith's or whatever he drinks and think, I messed things up there. That was a really good position for me to be in. I was in a comfortable job. I was getting well paid. An owner who, you know, ultimately is not a very hands-on owner. And I think probably down the line he maybe look back. I'm sure Mick never second guesses anything he does, but I still think he'll probably look back and say, "Yeah, I probably messed that one up."
Quite possibly.
Anyway, Craig, by playing both Shalabar and Skuse, are we restricting our play going forward? Should we sacrifice one of them to allow a more attack-minded midfielder to play, i.e. Roberts, Rowe, Jackson, and when ready, those in the treatment room, Bishop, Hughes, etc.?
I think more so the second batch of those.
Yeah.
I don't think you should sacrifice one of them and stick another winger / actual attacking midfielder in there. Once Teddy Bishop, who missed the under-23 game actually with illness, the club said, once he and Hughes are fit, I could definitely see one of those taking that position.
What's the deal with Adeyemi, by the way? Is he ever going to play again?
I think we really know, to be honest. It's just a continuation of he doesn't feel good in his own body, and Hurst has made his views on that pretty clear in terms of he feels that he can push himself a little bit further. There's no continuation since those comments, really.
Okay. I'll be honest, I hope I'm wrong. It wouldn't shock me if we didn't see him play a single minute under Paul Hurst. He's out of contract next summer.
Play up his contract in January, something like that.
Wouldn't shock me if that happened.
It's not worked out for Mr. Adeyemi, has it?
No. Nope.
Dylan, this is a good question. How do you see the midfield being when all the injured players are back fully fit? So you've got Dizel, Hughes, Bishop all back, raring to go. Who do you play if everyone's available?
Further down the line, Dizel definitely, I think, has still got a big role to play. But we're talking at the minute, it almost is like they're going to kind of wrap him heavily in cotton wool for at least another 6 months. And then possibly a loan spell in the second half of the season, almost like another year out sort of thing, the way they're talking.
Development year.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
If we're talking about sort of a midfield three with one of those midfielders at the tip of the midfield and the other two behind, I'd just speaking off the top of my head, I'd like to see a three of Nolan, Shalabar, and then another of Bishop and Hughes. That would be a three that I'd like to see.
Okay,
yeah, go with that.
Colin Mays, we have actually discussed this, Colin, but thanks for your question. He'd just like to know the opinion on playing one up top. In my opinion, it doesn't work.
So. I'm related to Colin.
Are you?
Yeah.
How do you know it's the Colin?
Well, I assume it is.
Colin Mays.
Yep, he loves Ipswich Town. He is my...
You wife. Follow him, actually, yeah.
He's my wife's stepdad's brother.
Ah.
And he's a good man.
Good stuff, Colin. Thanks for your question. We've got two questions left, boys.
Just on the midfield thing, going back a minute, Andy sort of mentioned Nolan first, and I think he has said himself, when he signed, we asked him about playing in the number 10 role, and he was quite clear in saying he sees himself as more of an 8. And
box, I think, to box.
Yeah, box to box. And I think, so maybe there's an argument that he could play the sort of, if you're staggering the three midfielders, you have one deep, one on the halfway line, one more advanced. I think he would prefer to be the sort of the middle one out of those two.
Mm. Hughes or Bishop could play the 10, couldn't they, do you think?
Yeah, again, I'd probably put Hughes in more of an 8 bracket as well. Bishop certainly more of a 10.
But Dizel, that number 10 role going forward next year, that number 10 role's got him.
Yeah, but he's another one that I think is quite sees himself almost as the quarterback, someone who
does
gets
anyone
the
want
ball
to play
and plays.
Does anyone, this 10 role seems great.
10 used to be the position that all the kids wanted to play, wouldn't it? You'd want to be that flair player, but these days everyone wants to be the ball-playing quarterback who gets the ball off the defence. So.
Adam Wade, we've got a patient owner, we're accepting change, but in the event of a full-on dire season, would we stick with Hurst or change again?
I think it's got to... We've touched on this already. I think it's got to be so dire for him to want to do that. And I just can't see that.
What qualifies a dire season? Going down bottom of the league? Is that dire?
But that being telegraphed, that kind of knowing that that's going to happen in January and February.
Yeah.
I can't see it. I just can't see that happening.
Mm. Jonathan Cook. Can we get it together in time for a certain game next Sunday? Andy Hutch-Warren's already guaranteed that that's when Town are going to get their first win.
They can.
Stuart Watson, you've previously guaranteed that if they don't win that game, you're going to get the winning scorer's name and number written on
the back. Oh, yeah.
I don't think I said tattooed. I said
no,
permanent.
No, we didn't say tattooed.
I said
written.
Marker is what
I said written.
Yeah.
But anyway,
you're getting the tattoo. Stu's having it written on his back.
Was I ever?
We'll need to listen back to
the
audio on
but anyway,
that.
Mr. Cook says...
Well, I touched upon this earlier. I do think having a full week on the training pitch will really help Ipswich Town, especially as Norwich have got a cup game at Cardiff that week. I'm still remaining cautiously optimistic about that. One thing's for sure, that result is going to be amplified, exaggerated, because A, it's a derby, and B, it then goes into an international break, so it's a big old game.
I think the atmosphere of that is going to be really good, because not only will there be that optimism, I still think it will be there, the new manager, new era, this is our time to get one over on Norwich. But with Paul Hurst's team starting games like lightning, can you imagine a lightning start against Norwich? Even if they don't score, don't profit on it, can you imagine what that atmosphere could be like? If that, we've had this debate for the last year or so about whose role it is to lift who, the players or the fans, but the players are going to go out there and give a lightning start against Norwich. That could get Portman Road rocking.
Yeah, and I think Hurst is going to buy into it more. Not that Mick didn't buy into it more, but he never really wanted to whip that up, did he? The Derby Day stuff. Well, it's another game. I've played for Rangers. I've played for Manchester. You know, I've been in the Midlands derbies and North East derbies, and he was very keen to sort of play that down. He was sort of laughing about it on TV again the other day, and I don't know if that sort of transcended to the players a little bit, but I think, you know, Hurst will and Doig and the rest of them will be, I think they'll have an extra bit of fire in their belly, and the lads that have stepped up as well, I think they'll raise themselves for it, I hope.
And just to finish off, the question we missed out last week from Lewis Robertson. It's a good one.
It is a good one. This is getting to the heart of the matter.
I think we need to spend some time debating this, but
we've all got thoughts on it.
Will there ever be a boy born who can swim faster than a shark? Lewis wants to know.
It's an office quote.
Gut instinct is no.
I'd say definitely no. I think it's more likely the other way around.
Yeah, and this is where the interesting stuff starts, doesn't it? Will there ever be a shark born who can run faster than a man?
I think it's definitely more likely than the other way around.
It's evolution, isn't it?
Mm. And this could, for all we know, this could be happening sort of out of sight, out of mind. The sharks could be working on this.
Well, we know the oceans are largely uncharted.
Exactly.
There are areas of the ocean
we've explored
nothing
more
about.
Of space than we have the sea.
That's the doctor.
That's why he's called the doctor.
And that's a fact. So you're right. In the depths of the ocean,
There could be all sorts going on down there.
You know how
in Rocky IV, like Drago's in his secret Soviet lab on his treadmill.
I love that montage, by the way.
Getting juiced up while Rocky's in the snow, messing about with fires and hammers and mountains. The sharks have got their little lab going in the depths of the ocean.
But how are they training to run underwater?
You don't know what's going on down there.
They could have a base.
They could have a little chamber down there
that's kind of.
You don't know. And that's the scary thing.
Have they got arms? Do they need arms?
Don't need them.
Like dinosaurs.
Like a little T-Rex.
Have you seen that gif online of it's a Tyrannosaurus Rex being a parking attendant. Just with his little arms, just back Jurassic Park, just back in a little truck up. I'll show it to you later.
Like a dude in a suit.
Yeah, it's good.
Outstanding.
They don't need arms, because can you imagine a shark running at you, then jumping at you with its massive mouth?
Just climbing up a tree.
Just and then jumping down on you.
No, that's the only way you escape. Yeah.
You just go for high ground, then and
well, buy the tree enough. Better choose your tree wisely.
Good point, actually.
Yeah,
good point.
Didn't think about
but
that.
But no, there won't be a boy born that can swim faster than a shark.
That's the conclusion. We're all agreed.
The only scenario here is that sharks, as a race, might die out, and ergo, the next boy that's born after the extinction happens swims faster than a shark.
Because they're dead.
Because they're dead.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Stop single-use plastics, people.
Yeah, otherwise we'll never know the answer to these questions.
Friends...
It's a good point to finish on, isn't it?
Well, it's still the transfers thing.
Oh, okay. We're going back to the football.
Well, you did say we'll come back to that. Now, there's the second transfer deadline day coming up a week tomorrow on the Friday.
Good.
I haven't actually seen that
when
many.
When is that? A week on Friday?
Yeah, August 31st.
Leading into the Norwich game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Needed another transfer deadline day, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Is that a 5 p.m. job again?
I hope so.
Who knows?
Right, we'll look at it anyway. Yeah.
But thoughts? I mean, obviously, you'd think that Hurst is going to try and get a couple in, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, at least two.
Yeah.
But every time we ask him now, every few days, I think early on, I think we expected almost one or two to come in days after the permanent window shut, that it would almost be deals that didn't quite happen in time, they would just revisit. But things just seem to be stalling a little bit at the moment. Every time we speak to him, Tuesday night after the game, anything further on loans? Big sort of smile and sighed and went, nope. was his response. So it strikes me as someone that he's getting a little bit frustrated. Basically, I think there's a chain there and there's stuff that's almost lined up, but the clubs are saying, we need to get someone in first, and this goes back to buying a house type chain situation. So that's where they're at.
Okay, so obviously you can follow all that with us next week. You can follow stuff today. If you listen to it today, it's press conference day. Stuart Watson is back. He's going off to Quiz Hollywood and Jordan Roberts today.
Yeah, Jordan Roberts, who had a decent little cameo at the end on Tuesday, putting a couple of really good balls into the box. So we haven't really spoken about him much. We've kind of almost accepted that he's a bit of a squad player, and Hurst has called him a project, but
yeah. Well, I've paraphrased that to you. He has called him a project, but he doesn't like the word project.
Okay.
So don't ask him about being a project.
Don't ask Hollywood about projects.
I hate that word as well. Football shouldn't. The word football and project just shouldn't go.
So what is he then? If he's not a project,
he's a work in progress.
Working. Okay.
Can we use that with Eden though? Because that works quite.
Well, yeah, we have to. That. Yeah. The Eden
it
project.
Works too well not to. Let's be honest.
Doesn't even make any sense because
doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Just works, doesn't it? So we've been talking now for quite some time. Talking about football. I should just say before we go, again, please make sure you subscribe and do leave us reviews on iTunes. We've got bloody loads of them now. Latest one,
too
just want to give it.
Anything.
You can never have too many good reviews, Stewie. The latest one, let me give a quick shout out to.
Can I give a little shout out to this beer company, Stu? If you're listening, lads.
We'll talk money first before we start giving away any free shout outs.
I'm more interested in their produce.
Yeah.
But you're a man who doesn't really drink beer.
Well, maybe if I was sponsored by a beer company, I might change my tune.
I like it. We could do reviews.
Go to the games dressed as like Duff Man.
That's fine.
Simpsons.
Yeah.
I think we should have them while we're doing the podcast as well. I think that would make it
lively. We could film the podcast if that helps.
Yeah,
if anything.
Absolutely. Anyway, Scobster81 is the latest person latest person to leave us a review. Says top draw. He's bang on, isn't he? He's Bob on the voice, Scobster.
Has he spelled draw properly?
He has, yeah.
Good
work from Scobster.
Love you, Scobster.
Nice one. Boys, what are you doing this weekend other than thinking about football and watching football and all that sort of stuff?
Barbecue at the Outlaws. This weekend,
nice.
On Sunday. Colin might be there, actually.
Yeah, good lad, Colin.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to on the grilled meats?
My burgers that I'm cooking and taking.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, maybe that's got Instagram.
I think
all
that. What homemade burgers are we talking about?
Big
that's
boy.
Got to be the next Instagram
They're big,
story.
Big boys as well.
And these special meats.
Yeah.
And Stewie, what are you up to?
I don't know, I'll be working really when I'm at Hillsborough on Saturday, be in the office on Sunday, just getting back on the
bank holiday Monday.
Yeah, we haven't discussed.
Do you need us to work on bank holiday?
I do not
Monday?
Need you to work on bank holiday Monday with certain
caveats,
conditions met, which I think you both know probably what that is because it's the bane of your life. Anyway, we'll talk about that off air.
That sounds worse than it is. It's just file some copies.
Yeah, just means do a little bit of work.
Just leave something in the list and have a day off, basically.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I'll be watching All or Nothing Manchester City because I'm quite into that.
Good.
Have you watched any of it?
It's really good.
It is good.
Got two episodes left.
I was slightly concerned that I still don't think football lends itself as well to such a format as American football, because American football, A, there's fewer games. They all mean a lot more, and it's a lot more gladiatorial, isn't it?
Mm.
Sports are a metaphor for war, and American football and the rugby one they did with the All Blacks, it literally is war, whereas football, obviously, you go out, you have players sort of kicking the ball around and falling over as soon as anyone gets anywhere near them. So it doesn't really work the same sort of way. But I tell you what, I'm slightly in love with Pep Guardiola.
He's great.
Isn't he?
My big takeaway from this is, Stu hasn't seen this.
No.
But I think you'd really enjoy it, Stu.
Yeah.
He loves swearing.
Oh,
he absolutely
wouldn't have him as a
absolutely loves it.
Totally changed my opinion of him. Right, I thought he'd be an arm around the shoulder kind of nicey. Let's
really all, technical.
Let's all get on.
He's not.
Good lord, he likes to swear up.
He loves it.
Yeah, especially if he thinks you're slacking in training. Does not appreciate that at all.
Mm.
So he's the absolute star. There's also the other guy, the boot room guy.
Yeah, who's he's good. The
class clown.
Yeah,
who's basically at the heart of everything. He earns probably in a year what players earn in less than an hour.
Yeah.
He's at the heart of everything.
Mm.
And also the other side for me is Fabian Delph with his accent. Yeah. Come on, lads, let's win to game. All that sort of stuff. That's how he talks. He shouldn't talk like that. That's how he talks.
I love watching Gabriel Jesus like speak through an interpreter all the time.
Yeah.
I watched one in the bath last night. Actually, I had a nice little soak in the bath, and it was his birthday the night before. I think they played Liverpool in the first leg of that Champions League game. They got battered in. And they gave him a little birthday cake, and he like had to speak through. I think it was through the Scouse guy, the Manc boot room guy.
Yeah,
he just like had to speak through an interpreter. It's just such an interesting dynamic.
Yeah,
he got a birthday cake then. Poor old Yaya Toure didn't get one, did he?
They've changed. Yaya's not in it very much, is he?
Well, he didn't really do much last season.
I know,
did he?
But I like him. Mm. I think he's all right.
The other guy I really like, which I don't know how much he's going to be part of, is Mendy. He's a character.
Yeah, once he got. Because when he gets injured, they follow him to Spain, don't they? He kind of disappears a little bit later on. But he does seem like a character.
It's certainly worth a watch, Stuart.
Okay.
And Richard Wright's in it as well.
Yes, he is, yeah. He's part of the goalkeeping.
Working with the goalkeeping corps.
You said his role in it was to hold the board up so he could kick the ball at it or something.
Yeah, he has two. Well, this is what we've seen in the show. Two roles. One is he's got all the iPads, technology and stuff, working with the goalkeepers on penalties, like where the upcoming opposition is going to place their penalties, and there's basically a whole episode about. Have you watched the one about Claudio Bravo yet?
No.
And they're running the Carabao Cup,
no.
And Richard Wright's quite central in that, working on penalties. Bravo saved like four penalties on the run to the Carabao Cup final. Richard Wright was a big part of that. He also stands in training holding this little reflective board thing, where the goalkeeper makes a save. If they catch it, the ball has to then be thrown at this deflecting board. And then they have to make another save from that, and he holds that board.
It's well worth a watch. Fascinating insight into the world of Premier League football. If it was time to do one, who would be the star?
Chris Skitt.
I don't know who that is.
He's the physio. He'd be the Manc guy.
Cole Skews would be a central character.
Yeah,
you've
said
he's
the got
Joker, yeah.
A good sense of humour. Yeah, yeah.
He was sat in reception at the training ground recently, wasn't he? Just kind of holding court at reception, he would be.
He would be the one.
Outstanding. Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of you are watching it. If you are, let us know what you think of it. And who would be the star of an Ipswich Town version of All or Nothing? At the moment, obviously, Ipswich Town, it is All or Nothing every game. We need a win. That's a royal we. We do need a win. You boys are going to be at Sheffield Wednesday this weekend. Follow the game with them online and in print and on Twitter and social and all sorts. As I say, leave us a review. Boys, any other business before we head off?
No other business.
No.
Excellent. Well, as ever, it's been lovely talking to you, and we'll speak to you again soon.